What is up? My name is Kenny Wu, an online fitness coach to help men in their 20s lose weight, get abs, and first time to mindset, nutrition, and training. That's enough about me. Let's get right into today's episode. Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Lived Inspired podcast. Today is Tuesday. That means I hop on a Zoom call with my clients. We're going to talk about, is there seasoning that should be avoided? Cold baths to stay consistent and motivated? Do we lose adipose tissue as we sleep? How does fat loss work? So let's go dive right in. All right, so we're going to start with the very first one. So basically, there's a seasoning that should be avoided. And I actually got a couple with me right now. So these are some seasonings here. I personally stick with salt, pepper, garlic powder, and cinnamon. Those are pretty much my four main ones itself. What I'm cutting down really specifically because my gut's very sensitive. I've been trying to maximize everything you can and the fat loss perspective and minimize inflammation. Those are the ones you should stick with. Now, I try to avoid more so the ones with a little bit of added stuff. So right over here, this one is roast garlic peppers. Absolutely love it. But it does contain some things like a little bit added sugar, spices, and canola oil, which can lead to a little bit more inflammation over there. And basically will make your body kind of hold a little bit of water, not give that kind of same look with this being harder to actually digest over there. Sounds great. Now, if I'm looking at, what is this? The seasoning salt one. This one doesn't really have it that, so just has salt, spices, dehydrated garlic, onion, spice extract, and calcium salicylate, which well, probably which is the last one. But this one's okay, right? But it really has, like, all you'd be more wary of them for the salt spices. Like, let's just say some more added sugars or citric acids or something like this one has, cornstarch too as well. That's a little bit more inflammatory on the body. So if you have, let's say, too much of these ones or even something more sensitive, I'm personally sensitive to that stuff. And I do actually get a test on this stuff too as well. And it's very highly sensitive for cornstarch. So actually when I started cutting out pretty much all these, sitting to salt, pepper, garlic, powder, cinnamon, I definitely noticed my weight off couple of days itself. I was definitely mostly water weight because I wanted more plain. Going on to get water over there, it was pretty actually big difference. Even though calories were exact same, I literally just cut out all on like sugar free sauces. Also, the seasonings that I pretty much had those days, which is salt, black pepper, garlic powder, and cinnamon. And my weight just dropped a little better, which is pretty crazy. I actually felt more energy just because of my body personally. And a lot of people's bodies don't really kind of handle that as well. So I would say if you're really trying to go all out, right, and maximize every single bit of your fat loss, or you look over there, then you should avoid these ones. Other than that, I'm not going to really kill you or anything like that. You can get the make your food taste better. And ultimately, at the end of the day, if you are going to with extreme true as well, maybe you are trying to cut down from like 10% body fat to below that on that side, but unless you're really, really sensitive to as well, like maybe you could experiment with that one. Maybe you'll notice a big difference. Like I remember one of my friends firstly, he's an IV pro. He's a pro in plastic and again, our coaching client, which I actually knew of. And this is not exactly with spices, but this is with stevia or Splenda he was using. So one of the clients was using a lot of Splenda every single meal when he was doing the bodybuilding prep, the exact same shows I was doing. And that was the only thing he actually added in, that he actually gained 11 pounds in like 4 days, something like that, because he's using that for every single meal in that end. And that was something his body didn't really agree with. And he was like, the coach, with my friend, was very confused. And he was also very confused, my most friend, but the client side of why he's gaining a lot of weight. He was really taking a look at everything. And he was like, well, what'd you do? Like, what'd you really eat? And I was like, and we're going through everything. He's like, oh, I did add in some little, you know, Splenda over here. This is kind of on topic seasonings, but basically kind of revert back to seasons truly as well, because he also mentioned another client who had used almost 12 of spices before and cut them all out. And her, I think it was a woman or something like that, but she lost like 6 pounds within the next week because of body very inflamed from all those other ingredients. So it could potentially work in your favor. And if you could really start stick with just salt, pepper, garlic, and cinnamon, then you'd be the best bet over there. So hopefully that makes sense. There's some science to that one. All right. So with that being said, cold baths / cold showers, what are the benefits? I know this is a very big hype right now about the cold showers. I'm seeing it everywhere, even with like Liver King doing all that stuff, or Wim Hof, that's a very big one recently. I've probably heard of these people. But they do have the benefits too, though. I would say they're a little bit exaggerated to the extent, though. But they can improve muscle recovery, because when you actually expose yourself to cold water, produce like muscle inflammation soreness, and which can actually help speed up the recovery process after intense workouts. Now, with that being said, the extent of how much it actually speeds up the process, it's not a 9-day difference, just a little bit over there. And it, you know, it might kind of pay off, right? Now, increased circulation, so it can actually constrict the blood vessels during it. And when you start to warm up, rapidly dilates it, gets the blood flowing over there, increases the circulation that way. During the thing, it's going to constrict it though, but after, when your body is like, okay, let's warm up, it's going to improve that blood flow, so overall blood flow is better. And a really cool one that I was watching his podcast, I think it's like Dr. Human Brain or something like that. He was basically talking about the levels of dopamine that can rise after this one. So I think it was like 3 times your base level dopamine or something really high. I don't remember the exact number, but after you do a cold shower or cold bath, the amount of dopamine that gets released is like, again, 5 times or maybe 3 times as much baseline. It can actually last for hours, right? After I can do the cold bath. So you're going to have that feel good hormone over there. It's feel really great. And if you've ever done like a cold bath or like cold shower, you'll know that feeling after you get out, not during. During kind of sucks. Well, it does suck. Actually, I did it this morning unintentionally because my apartment building, they didn't have any hot water at all today. So I had to shower cold. It was weird. If I said we're going to work order over there and they got fixed now. But also last night, that was first happened, and I was like, what's going on? So I had to deal with cold showers, and it was not fun. But I definitely felt better afterwards, say that much. All right, so actually boosted immune system too as well, because when you expose yourself to cold, it could actually stimulate white blood cell production, which white blood cells are basically the ones that are fighting off your colds and everything like that, helping your immune system. And they can actually improve your weight loss and fat burning just a little bit over there, because it improves your metabolism. Especially when you try to warm yourself up after you get out there, which can just help with weight loss, but that number isn't very small. You have to remember that aspect over there. So that's why I mentioned earlier, effects are very exaggerated. When people kind of look at this, they kind of look at the night and day difference as like, oh, it'll burn a lot of fat, right? But in reality, it might burn maybe, I don't know, additional 40 calories over there from the warm-up process. All right, improved skin and hair health, they can help those ones over there. And actually, cold showers are often recommended for people with skin conditions like acne or eczema, which is pretty cool. Now, stress reduction is a really big one, I would say, from the cold exposure. Like, if you guys are constantly kind of stressed from like work and stuff like that, or let's say you get really stressed from your partner, or small things kind of stress you out itself, like they say, cold exposure is actually a form of stress itself, but it actually reduces your overall response of stress over time. So basically, but if you do these cold showers and, you know, are putting yourself through this stress, when you go through the other stresses, it's not going to be as much of a stress on your body or the level at the same extent. So things that stressing you more before, they might be at a lower level now, right? So how you perceive that stress or perceive that event is going to be a lower level, if that makes sense, which I found that part really cool. So basically makes your body more resilient to stress. And for more resilient to stress over there, well, your body's going to recover a lot better. And guess what? You're able to lose fat more efficiently and build muscle more efficiently from those things. So that's a really cool part about that side and how kind of stress really works together with this. And better sleep quality, some people actually find to take a cold shower before bed can help them sleep, just because we tend to pretty much sleep faster when our body temperature is lower. So that's why you're in a really sunny place, really, really hot, and you have all the fans and so it's really hot over there. It's like plus 40, you probably have a hard time falling asleep. If you ever felt that in summer, I definitely did. In the winter, I actually find I sleep really easily and just knock myself out like that because it's a colder body temperature. Now, next one is to stay consistent and motivated. Now, to stay consistent and motivated is obviously something that I get asked all the time. How do you stay consistent? How do you stay motivated? And to answer the first part about staying consistent over there, it's as simple as it sounds, it's pretty much like really looking at your goal over there. And I always have to ask myself too as well, especially when I was first, every time I first started a goal, is that to consciously ask myself, is this getting closer or further to my goal? Now, obviously at first itself, I have that habit of asking myself that question, like, you know, let's say I'm trying to lose 20 pounds, something like that, and my buddies are asking me out to go for drinks. I would have to consciously ask myself, is this going to help me get further close to my goals, right? And answer that question, well, it's going to be further, so I'm not going to make that action choice. Now, maybe I could go to that place and just have water over there and just stay near to your drinks. That's another option too as well. Because let's say, yeah, I'll go, I decide to go. You make that strict rule with yourself. Be like, okay, I'm going to go, I'm just going to have water. And you make that strict rule over there, and you don't deviate that. Because when you start getting lenient to deviating from your original plan, which said your mind, you already failed, because it's a mind thing, right? It's like a lot of people have this all or nothing mindset. You know, have this plan going in, they fail, they kind of go all, well, I fucked up, I had one drink, I had one beer, I might as well have five, two, or like, you know, kind of like to 10 or something like that. So next thing you know, you're blackout drunk. But the next part about staying consistent to those walls is just really aligning yourself with that goal. So what I mean by that is you want to make your goals as visible as possible, so your subconscious is aligned with that. So what I mean by that is I personally have my phone screen background of my goals, my desktop actually, and have vision work on the wall to this wall. Because when we see our goals all the time, it subconsciously makes us want to do things in alignment with that goal. Because we've only seen our goal like once or ever skated our goal like one time in like 2 months, your actions are probably not going to align with that goal as much because it's not top of mind, right? So whatever top of mind is right now, like let's just say your work right now, for a lot of people, they work all day and they feel something that's made them stressful. I don't know, maybe the boss kind of pissed them off or something that day. And then you probably forget about, you know, maybe your goals over there, fact of mind, this is 20 pounds. And then you might lean towards, you know, going to the McDonald's drive-thru, getting something to kind of make yourself feel better in the moment. But if you saw your goals all the time to his wall and your focus, your background, so consciously your wall, or just like, you know, kind of constantly remind yourself, I personally write down my daily goals to his wall, but it's just reminding yourself of that goal basically multiple times through the day. So your subconscious is like, okay, well, I'm going to make more actions to align with that one. Because when you see your goals all the time itself, even though you're not focused 100% on it, you already kind of subconsciously make decisions that are going to help more towards there. And I definitely found this one really kind of helps out for me, especially when I start writing down my daily kind of goals. And I remember there was like a Harvard study that people who wrote down their goals physically on paper, like every single day, were like, I don't know, like 80% or something that's more likely to achieve them, which is a crazy stat. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to try that out. And I pretty much been doing that for over 3.5 years now. And it definitely helped me out in the last. It was health, wealth, relationships, more fitness-wise, helped in all those aspects. Now, in terms of staying motivated, that's a really big one because I'm not motivated all the time, like 100%. Like I would say 20% of the time is actually when I'm actually motivated to do my workouts. Other times I just do the workouts, right? It's like truly motivated. So I just pretty much do it over there. Now I love working out. I love doing all that one, but feeling motivated is like, I would say, a further extent where we should always kind of be, because that's like a euphoric kind of state, and where our body is like, let's say you have like this normal kind of state, and motivation is on the outside, or they just feel like you want to do them, you're like really excited for all that stuff, and that's about the baseline kind of levels over there. So if you're actually motivated, that's very temporarily for like most of all. You probably think about that for, I don't know, maybe when you first started doing a job or something like that, but more to do your best, or every time someone starts something new, usually the most motivating, right? So going back to that elevated kind of baseline over there, especially in my bodybuilding prep, there was so many days. I would say probably like 1% of the days I was actually motivated to actually do my workouts or, you know, do the cardio. But no, I'd say like 0.5% of the days were 0.01% of the days I was motivated to do the cardio, because God, it was just so much cardio over there. And it was just always forcing myself to do it, right? Having that plan and going along with it. And the thing was, when you have a plan, and you have to stick to the plan, do what you say you're going to do, or gets, you know, like I have a plan for you, follow that one. It builds confidence in yourself. That's the biggest thing, because once you start breaking that confidence, say if you miss one day of the workouts, or you said you were going to go eat, like you know, your post-workout meal, whatever is all there, and then you actually go to the McDonald's drive-thru instead, you're acting at a lower like frequency, I'm going to call over there. And then your energy is a little bit off and you kind of internally feel more guilty in that aspect, and your confidence almost kind of drops, right? When I say confidence, this aspect is just knowing you can do anything, or just knowing that you're going to get to that goal over there. Because when you do things and you have that line fall and everything to that line itself, and you get the results, you probably know that you get confidence in that, and you're like, okay, I feel good, yeah, things are working over there, and you know that you're alignment, right? So it's like people who, I don't know, are drug addicts or go to Alcoholics Anonymous, they know they shouldn't be having alcohol or, you know, relapsing on a drug over there. They feel that internal guilt, right? And they kind of find themselves back in that state over there. But it's just that internal guilt you associated in this case scenario of, like, you know, if you're not doing that workout when you said you're going to do the workout. The same kind of feeling, and obviously to the extent you feel that, it's going to be different just due to circumstances. But you just want to build that confidence within yourself. Is when you, you know, see you're something, you do it over and over again, then you know the next time you set, let's say, a weight loss goal, losing 50 pounds this time, or when I step on stage now, I know I'm going to be the most shredded I am for like 16 weeks because I've done it so many times. Like every time I set out to, you know, do a show or lose X amount in a cut, I always get it done, right? And the first times I was getting it done over there, I just have to keep following the process, keep doing it. And even times I hit plateau, I just kept following along and I had achieved every result. But when you receive it multiple times, you know you build that confidence when you. So next time you set a goal, it's like, fuck yeah, it's going to happen, right? Just no doubt to your mind. And you might have had that in different areas of life. Maybe it's business-wise or something else where you're like, okay, I'm going to do something. It gets done. The next time you do something similar, apply to something similar, it's like, you know what's going to happen, right? You're just confident in yourself. And that's the same thing with the weight loss or just any kind of fitness goals. So that's pretty cool over there. And let's go on the next one now. So it's basically, do we lose adipose tissue as we sleep? So do we lose fat as we sleep? Now, there's two different things on this one. I want to target more how does fat loss work in the next kind of topic over here, which I'm going to get to. So with that being said, I don't know. What's that recording? All right, testing, testing. All right, okay, I think it's good. On this wireless mic. All right. So where we're looking. I'm going back to my notes. So adipose tissue, do we lose adipose or fat tissue as we sleep? And the answer that was short for means basically yes. And we do basically breathe. When we breathe, we do lose some kind of fat over there. But I'm gonna go more in depth with that in the next one's how to lose fat. And that's basically the end of the whole process. And we are breaking it down in steps. But I want to talk about in a bigger form of how fat loss and sleep kind of go one-to-one together, because I believe this one would get you a better understanding of why sleep is so important and like why, you know, I emphasize it so much. And there's a couple of key points. And number one is going to be hormonal regulation. So, you know, like hormones like human growth hormone, leptin, and testosterone, the muscle development hormones, or the ones that may see regulate your appetites. For example, let's go with leptin over here, because let's just say if you don't get enough sleep, your leptin levels might be a lot higher, which is going to affect how full you feel, right? And that's not going to be great. And ghrelin, which is basically, that's going to stimulate the hunger over there. If you don't get enough sleep, you have higher ghrelin levels, so you're going to be hungry more time. So let's just say you have an increased appetite and also, you know, you're more hungry all the time because of your sleep. Well, next day, it's so much harder to control your appetite over there or for your food, your calorie intake. And if you go over, eat a lot more, then that's going to directly put on that fat, right? So that's one, that's big one big aspect. And that's just for a fat loss perspective. We could go a lot more in depth in terms of muscle building. How many goes back to that? And that's if we're going to start. I'm going to talk more just the fat loss in this kind of section. Now, energy expenditure. So basically, when we're in the deep sleep, our body goes in process to like build back up our tissue and our muscle recovery, which doesn't directly lead to a fat loss tissue, but this basically improves the body's overall expansion and metabolism over there. And this is going to burn some of the calories to recover those muscles over there, right? So that's one of the processes in there. And metabolic health, if you actually don't really get good sleep over there, you'd be more insulin resistance, right? And insulin is something that's going to make or break your fat loss. You're pretty much diabetic over there, where your insulin levels all screwed up itself. You're going to have a really hard time actually releasing that fat as fuel over there and breaking down those tissues. So that's going to be very hard. And also, like circadian rhythm, if you have like just sleep, disrupted sleep patterns over there during shift work or something like that, it heavily negatively, in fact, impact your metabolism, which can actually cause more weight gain over there. And that's why night shift workers itself usually kind of a harder time to lose that weight or make it sustained weight loss, is because other circadian rhythms all screwed up, your metabolism's also messed up too as well, and your hormones function, how it recovers, everything like that is a little bit more messed up, right? So stress and emotional eating are big ones too as well. When you actually lost sleep, like kind of back to the burst point, increasing most of your ghrelin and also leptin, so you have more appetite and have increased hunger, then you're probably more likely to stress eat too as well. On top of this one, with a bigger appetite, and you know, when you're stress eating, bigger appetite, more hungry, probably gets you a little bit more in the pool. Right, so we all kind of toppled over, and that's why I wanted to go on to this one, explaining in that sense how it really kind of affects it, because most people don't really kind of think about that sense. But in terms of actual physical, like fat loss, what you lose off bison, your stomach, the fats over there, it's a pretty neat process. So the first step, basically fat metabolism, is called lipolysis. So basically your fat cells release fat acids into your bloodstream over there. And now this usually happens pretty much when you're actually only happens when you're in a calorie deficit, basically burning more calories than you consume, right? So then the fatty acids get released into your bloodstream, into like the muscle cells, which they store as energy. And then when you get converted into ATP, right? So ATP is adenosine triphosphate. This is basically your body's kind of fuel source over there. So whether you're doing, you know, bicep curl, that's going to be used over there, or maintain your body temperature, or just other functions to get your body functioning, that's going to be used over there. But now as this kind of happens to this wall, it's going to have CO2 as a byproduct, right? So the carbon dioxide is transported to the bloodstream, to the lungs, and in that kind of process, when we're using them, track to your muscles, maintain your body temperature, or other things, we breathe out CO2 and also the fat metabolism. This is how fat is metabolized, right? Based on the form of CO2 as we are breathing. So that's pretty cool how that kind of process works on there, right? So it's not just like we magically, you know, run and it's a one-to-one ratio. It's there. We'll just breathe out because our body processes, does all these chemical reactions, and then it just uses it, we'll breathe it out. So that's a pretty cool thing. All right, so that covers all of the topics over here. I'm going to go stop this recording. And just stop when.
Thank you, Josh, for tuning into the Live to Inspire podcast, the number one podcast for men in their 20s, but lose weight and get abs in the first time. My great chance to inspire others to do the best stories of fitness. So, if you guys would tune into the episode and want to lose weight and get your abs shown for the very first time, give me your abs on Instagram, Matt Kevin Bark Sport. That is NATMAVINET, WU_. And we'll have a chat whether or not I can help you out. Use that weight to get your abs showing for the first time. That is the ending of today's episode of the Live to Inspire podcast. If you learned something today, then make sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss out on an episode. Also, if you leave a written review on this podcast, that'd be greatly appreciated because that pushes this podcast to more people just like you.